Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Everybody, welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, and with me again is my good friend Beardy.
Hi, Justin.
Still on the show and still on the road, our Brewing Network 2023 Summer Tour. I'm calling it. And I think I actually decided last night, I didn't tell you yet, I'm changing the name of the show.
Oh.
Yeah. To Justin and the Beard.
Oh,
so the session, at least while you're with me, is now just going to be called Justin and the Beard.
I mean, it has a nice ring to it. It could just be the new permanent title.
Like permanent, but yeah. So you're not going home to Washington?
We'll have to tell Candy eventually, but
she'll figure it out.
Yeah,
yeah.
She might not even miss me for the first year.
That's probably true. Well, it is the Justin and the Beard Roadshow, at least for now, and we've made it to our second stop. It's the third day of the tour, but today we're in Westlake Village, which is down in L.A. County. We've made it to L.A. already.
Yeah.
Day 3 of the tour. But only our second brewery show.
And we only showed up at the wrong brewery once so far.
Yeah, I did. Let me introduce
I wasn't even navigating.
It was, yeah. Well, you did navigate us into a difficult situation, though. We're here at 14 Cannons Brewery and Showroom in Westlake Village. And we're here with the co-founder and brewmaster, Nick Bordelon. Nick. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the show, guys.
Yeah, man. You came recommended to us, actually. And of course, we've since tried your beer and read a little bit about you. So we're so glad that you were recommended to us. Beardy was like, hey, on this tour, see if we can go to 14 Cannons. So we're happy you were available. I lucked out that you're not in the middle of a brew day. Listeners, you might hear a little bit of beer bubbling away back there, though. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tanks are full.
Yeah. I love it. So, yeah, we're on day 3. It's our second stop. Yesterday, though, we also went to the Firestone Walker...
Barrel Works?
Barrel Works in Buellton, right? And when I got there, I started texting one of the Firestone brewers that I know, Sam. And I'm like, hey, Sam, I'm here. I'm in your tasting room, man. So if you're not busy, you know, I just want to say hi. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, just come on back to the brewery. So we asked the staff there, hey, how do we get to your brewery? And they look at me like I'm an idiot. Like, well, what do you mean?
Drive north for an hour?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I didn't ask for Sam yet. I just said, where's the brewery? And you know, they're like, well, it's right there. I said, okay, well, how do I get there? And, well, you're not allowed there. No, your brewer's telling me to come join him. I'll show you the text. It's fine. So they sort of point us toward the brewery. And we go there, and there's nobody there.
And also not a brewery.
Yeah, it's more of a barrel room.
Yeah.
So I asked a manager, and I'm like, hey, you know, Sam, he's trying to get me to go to the brewery. And she's like, who's Sam? that's not our brewer's name. I finally realized that Sam is at the Ventura location. No,
Venice.
The Venice location.
Venice location.
See, I would have messed that up, too. He's in the Venice location. So I have to text Sam back like an idiot. I'm like, hey, turns out I forgot which brewery you're at, and I'm not there. So that was our Buellton stop.
Yeah.
But it was worth it.
Yeah.
We had fresh DBA.
Right.
which
are
you
they
found,
distributing it very much anymore, or is it just through their tasting rooms?
I don't know. I think they're still distributing it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You thought it's changed, though. You found it more citrusy.
Then I remember, but it's been a couple years, and to me, while it still had the classic double barrel fermentation character,
yeah,
there was a very bright grapefruit kind of citrus note to it that was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
But kind of a departure from what I remember being a more English ale, like traditional English style beer.
I think you're right. I think they changed it to match, you know, people's changing palates. Everybody wants a little citrus now in their beer.
Yeah.
Even if it's a DBA, you know, mm-hmm. an English ale. So I like the change. I maybe Camera wouldn't think it's as good of a English ale anymore.
Yeah.
But I think people on the West Coast or anybody in the West in the U.S. thinks it's a good change.
Oh, yeah.
It makes it, I thought it made it just taste sort of fresher and brighter that way, too.
Yeah, definitely. And probably have to enter it in a different GABF category now, but mm-hmm. still
right.
easy drinking.
Yeah, good beer. And then, so we made our way to Ventura yesterday. We're staying on the coast there. Do you know, like Rincon Parkway?
Oh yeah,
it's just like a line of RVs on a street.
Were you flying a flag with your RV?
I didn't fly the flag, but I should have. I really should be. I've seen it before driving down here, and you drive down, you're on 101, and then there's literally just a line like back to front, nose to nose, RVs for like what seems like 2 miles.
Miles, yeah.
And I always wondered what it was, so I looked when I knew we were coming this way. I found it, booked it. It's a super cool spot. You have to parallel park your giant RV.
Yeah.
That's kind of a trick. But other than that, it's really cool. You look out your window then, and there's water. I mean, you're what are we, 10 yards from the water?
Yeah, you look out the window, and you don't even see the beach, because the beach is only about 10, 15 feet wide there.
Yeah.
So it just looks like the ocean is washing right up to the RV.
Right. Which is super cool on the one side, but then on the other side of the RV is a highway and a train track. So it's, I mean, I love it, but it's also kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, if the RV is behind you and you're looking at the ocean, it's super cool and you feel like you're in this sort of pristine spot, your own oceanfront property. Mm-hmm. But if you have to get something from the other side of the RV, you sort of feel like you're in the ghetto.
And about to get hit by a car.
About to get hit by a car. But it's a super cool spot anyway, and it's right in Ventura. So we went and finally got to see my friend's place, Fluid State, which is mm-hmm. an excellent craft beer bar and pizza place, basically.
Yeah.
Pizza, charcuterie in downtown Ventura. Do you know this place, Nick?
Know it well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm not gonna. I wasn't blowing smoke up there. Anything. Their pizza was about the best slice I've had in I can't remember how long.
Oh yeah,
it was incredibly good pizza.
Aaron has perfected his sourdough
crust,
and because you can get it just the bread on the charcuterie board, but then the same dough is used for the pizza, and
yeah,
it's just getting crisped up in that oven perfectly.
It really is, and I'm a bit of a. I'd like to say that I'm a pizza purist, but that's not really true. I'm just a creature of habit. I'm like pepperoni and olives all the time. That's all. I don't eat the fancy combination. I don't want other random stuff. I just want a basic. But his basic pepperoni with green olives on it blew my mind.
Yeah.
You and had like a wonky, crazy one.
Yeah. I think it was called the Perfect Storm. Mm. And then because we were talking about spicy things and I mentioned I'm a habanero fan. He said, I've got the slice for you. And it was a clam slice with garlic. And the sauce was pickled habaneros, basically kind of pureed, and with a little bit of pizza sauce mixed in.
Yeah.
And just drizzle that on top. Oh, man.
It looked good. I don't think I would have liked it, but it looked amazing.
You would have been sweating, but you might have enjoyed yeah. the slice still.
Yeah, he had me taste. He just had like a hot sauce, like a house-made hot sauce type thing. I just took, like, you know, where you dip the fork in just to get a taste.
Yeah.
I had to drink a glass of water after that. I can't do heat at all. But it was a good time. Yeah. So thanks to Aaron and Jen at Fluid State for having us, and it was cool to be able to finally see their spot. Also, while I'm thanking people, thanks to More Beer, our sponsor today, this show and every show, whether we're in the studio or on the road, it is brought to you by our good friends at More Beer. Nick, what's the first beer that you served us here?
We're drinking Patient Pilsner. This is our Czech Pilsner. It's a year-round beer we have. It's one of our core beers. We package this in cans as well.
Oh, nice.
And we love it. This is our number two seller by volume. Yeah.
Behind what?
Behind our West Coast IPA.
Of course.
Yeah, okay. We're still in Southern California.
I'm glad it's a West Coast, though. Yeah. That's happy
yeah. Yeah.
to hear.
So I love this beer. It's just floor malted Pilsner malt. From Weyermann.
Okay.
And then we use Kazbek hops in this. So instead of using the traditional saws that I feel like everyone ever uses just because they know that saws equals Czech, we found Kazbek, and it's also imported from Prague.
Okay.
And we love it. The lemon note that we get from that hop, I just think is fantastic. So it's aggressively hopped, just like a Czech Pilsner should be. It's hopped all throughout the boil. And instead of using saws, we use Kazbek. And we really love the lemon we get from Kazbek and the nice crisp bitterness as well.
It has a crisp bitterness is the perfect description. I was going to say firm bitterness, which it does have, but I think crisp bitterness is a better description. It's there up front and then fades away into kind of even more lemon citrus. Not like a new school hop citrus. It's a different kind of lemon, right? It's
total old world, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like this beer a lot.
Yeah.
And crystal clear, you have a centrifuge.
We do.
I wouldn't call it a tiny brewery because I've been in some tiny breweries, but I'm surprised to see a centrifuge sitting there.
Yeah, we packed a lot in a small space.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Efficiency is this brewery's like middle name.
Right, right. This beer does get laid down in our lagering tank before we centrifuge, so that also helps with the clarity.
Okay.
And also makes it so we don't need any kind of polishing filter post-centrifuge. It's hitting there pretty clear already from the lagering tank.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah.
How long does it sit in the lagering tank for?
This is a 6-week beer. Okay. So we don't rush any of the lagers out of here. And I think today we'll talk a lot about just how much we like doing lagers and being so close to a great brewery like Enegrin. Also has like a lot of our consumers like aware of lagers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in a really special spot where people come in asking about lagers instead of just what hazy do you have?
Sure.
Which is really nice.
But you only have one lager tank.
We do. So
You're waiting 6 weeks for the next lager to go in there.
Yeah, sometimes we are. Yeah, okay. We'll do primary in the conicals.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then we transfer it over into the lagering tank. So we'll do primary fermentation and then be able to harvest the yeast out of the conical, which we found works really well. And then we'll transfer it over. And that helps us have 4 core lagers on tap year-round.
Wow.
So we always have, you know, healthy, fresh lager yeast coming out.
Nice. What yeast do you like to use?
We use the Czech 3470.
Okay.
That we found. We love that. We get all our yeast from BSI, so shout out BSI.
Yeah.
They're great. They take really good care of us.
Nice.
And yeah, and that's found to be just the cleanest ferment that we can get.
Okay.
No diacetyl really with that one ever, which is great.
It's also really low sulfur. I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And sometimes I like a little sulfur, and sometimes I don't. And I think, I don't know if it's this hop choice that you have here, but I love the how clean this one is.
Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. We try and make this as clean as possible.
Yeah.
I like some sulfur too. Sometimes going to like a German brewery or, you know, if you're in Germany, I love walking in and just smelling that sulfur.
Yeah.
But unfortunately I think here in the States all too often people associate that as just like a crazy off flavor.
Yeah.
So we really try and avoid that. Cause consumers, if they smell sulfur, then it's, you know, the end of the world.
You did something wrong.
And it's like, well, have you been to Munich? Like,
and clearly
some of those breweries are just stinky.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of those towns are. Because
yeah. Right. Right. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good beer.
Thanks.
So, let's learn a little bit about you, Nick, cause 14 Cannons is not your first rodeo.
No, it's not.
Where did you start your brewing career?
So I started my brewing career down in Temecula, right outside of San Diego. I studied to be a teacher in college.
Okay.
So, you know, typical brewing path.
Yeah.
So I actually moved down to Temecula to teach high school music and quickly realized that I didn't like kids that much.
Okay.
So good use of 6 years of school.
Oh, no.
And I was very fortunate that, you know, I was a home brewer all through college.
Okay.
And so when I was in Temecula, the brewing scene was exploding down there. This is, you know, the early 2010s and Stone and everything. And
sure.
You know, San Diego's in the hop war still, the IBU war. It was great.
Yeah.
You know, you walk into every brew pub or brewery down there, and it's, you know, what IPA is going to hurt me?
Right. Back when we used to ask how many IBUs there
yeah,
are.
How many hundreds of IBUs are in this?
Yeah.
Let me get my homebrew calculator out.
Exactly. Okay, nice.
And I walked into a brand new brewery called Ween's Brewing Company. They are unfortunately since closed. I don't think they made it through COVID.
Okay.
But they have a great family winery down there, and that's Temecula is a huge wine town.
Yeah.
And so one of the brothers of the winery, his name was Peter Weens, and he was a Budweiser brewmaster for years and years and years. And they finally just said, like, little brother, what are you doing working for Bud? You know, come build a brewery. And so they got in on the craft beer explosion.
Okay.
And so my intro into craft beer was learning from a Budweiser brewmaster.
Wow.
So it just, you know, started with quality. And
so that must have been a heavily lager brewery too?
You know, surprisingly, no. We only had one lager.
Okay.
And a flight of 12 IPAs.
Wow. But, he's like, forget that. Yeah. I broke free.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We were definitely in on the IPA craze. It was a lot of fun. I learned a ton. And yeah, really, really lucky to have that as my, you know, intro into craft beer. Is like, you know, you can say all you want about macro beer and that sucks and all that, but it's the most consistent product, you know, in America.
Yeah.
And so just to have that kind of foundation was huge for me.
Okay.
He's now the brewmaster of Diageo. So, which is Guinness.
Yeah.
So he's Guinness now. So also a really amazing phone number to have on my phone. If, you know,
absolutely.
Hey, if something's going wrong, let me just call the brewmaster of Guinness real quick.
And, yeah. That's not bad at all.
And see why this fermentation stalled or something like that. So,
right.
Yeah.
But at that time, and I'm assuming to this day, you're also a musician.
Yes, I am.
A bit of a professional musician if you were going to be a music teacher.
Yeah, so back then it was a lot of fun. I'm a trumpet player by trade.
Okay.
So I was teaching high school band, and then also playing trumpet at Disneyland was a lot of fun.
Nice.
So just like couldn't be more stereotypical Southern California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what do? I play trumpet at Disneyland.
Yeah. Play trumpet at Disneyland, then I got to go Harvest East.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. So that was fun. Still playing some orchestras, and then I'm in a ska band in LA now.
Oh, heck
so
yeah.
Shout out the Scuba Kids.
Where can we see the Scuba Kids? Yeah. On this tour? Are you playing?
Man, we don't have a show this weekend. Okay. We had one last weekend.
Got it.
Yeah. But, you know, check us out on Spotify, shameless plug.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. We play here at the brewery, so anytime you come to 14 Cannons and we're doing a big event, there'll definitely be some 90s grunge ska in the back.
I love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
A lot of fun. So really great start to my brewing career, learning down at Ween's Brewing. Mm-hmm. Graduated all the way up to head brewer there.
Okay.
And then went and did the American Brewers Guild. So, you know, I figured I'm going to make this a career now. I'm not doing the teaching thing.
Sure.
So
let's go back and pay for more school.
Yeah. So did the schooling thing. American Brewers Guild was awesome. So all their classes are taught by, you know, beer professionals. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having the hops class taught by Matt Bernaldson is pretty cool.
That's
like,
pretty,
you know,
awesome.
He's Dr. Hops.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really good education. And then worked for Figaro Mountain.
Great brewery.
Great brewery.
I really like their beer.
They're a metal factory. So it's like, and that's what really attracted me. It was like, they win several GABF medals every single year. What are they doing?
Yeah.
I was told they were in Santa Barbara. I was lied to. They're in Buellton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to go from San Diego area up to Santa Barbara. I thought that'd be a fun life move.
Yeah. And you end up in Buellton.
But Santa Barbara's great. Buellton's great.
Yeah.
And worked there for a lot of years and had a lot of fun and, you know, got to join the team, the big brewing team, which was a great experience.
Okay.
You know, I'm like grew up my whole life doing team sports and being a part of a big brew team is I think important.
Sure. Do they have a big production brewery or do they have just breweries at all of those locations?
Now I think they have a 60 barrel big production brew house.
Okay.
I was there, we were on a 15 barrel system filling up 120 barrel fermenters.
Oh, wow.
So it was like 48 hours straight of brewing. It was,
that's where the team comes in.
That's where the team comes in. Yeah. You really got to depend on each other when you're doing 8 brews in a row to fill up a tank.
Right.
Nonstop. So 24 hour brew cycle.
That's incredible.
It was a huge learning experience, doing the big production thing And, you know, and also being a part of that GABF culture and winning all those medals, which was a lot of fun. And obviously, you know, it's a good feather in the cap.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then finally got my opportunity to do my own thing here at 14 okay. Cannons. Met the Marshall Group, who builds amazing breweries.
Okay.
And was kind of just handed, you know, a blank check and the reins. And here we are at 14 Cannons.
Well, let's talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get another beer in our glass. And, yeah, the concept here is really fascinating to me. And the key sort of being this, or at least something we need to understand, is this blank check that you were given. Because it's not that Nick just found like a rich uncle. It's a really cool concept that they have here. And we'll talk about 14 Cannons Brewery and Showroom and how that concept ties in when we come back. You're listening to The Session. Hang in there. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us today. And we are still hanging out at 14 Cannons in Westlake Village. Is it 14cannons.com?
It is.
Yeah, go to 14cannons.com. You can check it out. We're going to talk about the concept now and what's happening.
Sure.
Here, and we'll get into the name. You were recommended to us from another listener and some fans to come check you out. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, didn't know about you. Look at the website, and it says, you know, 14 Cannons Brewery and Showroom. And I see this whole nautical theme, and we'll get into some of the story of the Tyrannicide, which was a ship in the Civil War, right? Or the Revolutionary War. And I was like, oh, Brewery and Showroom, like, okay, they do reenactments or something there. I thought that it was like a... So when I came here, I expected to see, like, a stage somewhere. I don't know.
When you're in the market for your next pirate ship...
Yeah, I
didn't. That's the showroom.
I'm trying to figure it out. But so let's talk about that, and we'll get to the bottom of this. And so you are owned by a construction group, a developing
general contractor.
Okay,
got it. Called the Marshall Group, mm-hmm. and they've been building high end restaurants in Los Angeles for 30 plus years, almost 40 years probably.
I see.
So it was all the high end concepts, celebrity chefs, stuff like that, big fancy steakhouses in downtown LA, okay. and years ago, they saw the trend of craft breweries coming to LA, and they wanted to get ahead of that and be the one-stop shop for people who want to build a brewery in LA.
Okay.
Their first brewery they built was Santa Monica Brew Works, who just did a huge expansion, and they're killing it. And they have a huge portfolio of breweries they've built in LA, in and around LA. And this just kind of served as, you know, doing that, they had installed so many, for example, premier brew houses, and they really knew how to work with, you know, moving tanks, and that's a, you know, learn how to rig brewing equipment is different,
yeah,
and not just anyone can do that, and I'm sure there's a lot of sad stories for people trying to do themselves and
right
and tend the tank or something like that.
It's a real specialty.
Yeah, mm. yeah, and so they got ahead of learning how to do that, and they wanted to be the one stop shop for people in LA that wanted to build a brewery, so they just decided to open up their own spot.
Yeah.
And that's how we were really born. And we had all these amazing equipment manufacturers that they were already used to installing their equipment. Mm-hmm. So really good relationship with everyone in the industry. So from the tile on the floor here to the glycol chiller on the roof, we can do it all. And
I see.
We have like huge scalability for everything. So we've done really small breweries that are much smaller than this, all the way up to big giant production facilities.
Got it. So we're sitting in what is a working brewery, a functioning brewery. We're in the tasting room, which is open to the public.
Yep.
I'm looking at the brewery and the fermenters next to me. But it then simultaneously serves as a showroom for the construction companies.
Right.
Okay. So that's the bottom of that
right.
story.
Yeah. Yep.
And then as such, you know, I mentioned your Centrifuge earlier.
Right.
So you have manufacturers kind of saying, hey, since you have a showroom, do you want to use this awesome piece of equipment?
Well, yeah, the agreement there was the Centrifuge specifically, that's a really big investment for a brewery, no matter what size you are.
Sure.
And what we kind of found was there were experienced brewers out there that if you've never operated a Centrifuge, it's really scary then to take the plunge and sign that paycheck over to buy a Centrifuge.
Yeah.
So with my kind of education background as, you know, a former teacher, it was, you can come and play on our equipment here and I can kind of teach you how to use it.
I see.
So adult children are fine.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You just don't like actual children.
Yeah, children with beer, great.
Yeah,
it's, you know, you wouldn't go buy a Ferrari or Maserati without being able to test drive it first, right?
Yeah.
So why spend the same like price tag on a centrifuge or another piece of brewing equipment without ever being able to use it?
Okay.
And so we've had a lot of people come and test out the equipment here. And, you know, that gives them confidence that and say, okay, I can operate this. This does do what it is advertised to do.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and buy one. So same thing with our Cody canning line. Had a ton of brewers come out and say, I want to check out the Cody before I go buy one.
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, this is how we use it. We use it every single week. So you can come any of the days we're packaging every week and hop on the line with us. I'll probably make you do some pack techs, but yeah. I'll also show you how to get the fill right. And, you know, if you want to carb something that's at, you know, 3 volumes, then it can handle that. And then this is how we do it.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you mentioned like sort of being given this blank check to do this. I assume that's because the construction company is doing the construction themselves. So
right,
costs
right,
are cheaper.
Right.
But they said to you, hey, our concept is we want a showroom.
Yeah.
But you build the brewery that you want.
Yeah. I got to build the brewery of my dreams. So, okay. You know, working in so many different facilities the past decade, you know, I've kind of always had a bucket list. And I mentioned earlier, like, I really wanted that fancy Argolith tile from Germany on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's antimicrobial and it's thick and it's not going to stain with chemicals. And, you know, you're not going to get those hideous, you know, acid stains that you see on everyone else's epoxy floors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so just little things like that, because I think most good brewers are kind of control freaks, you know, and so I got to, you know, build the brewery of my dreams, and you guys are sitting in it now.
It's pretty
big. Do they live up to the hype? Have you broken one? Or stained one yet?
I have yet to break a tile. So
oh, okay.
Yeah, we're almost 6 years in. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, what's the beer in our glass?
We're drinking K17. This is our Czech Dark Lager. So K17, more of my quick backstory, was my apartment number when I lived in Prague.
Okay.
So after I finished my undergrad, I went and studied abroad. And just chose Prague because it looked like a fun time.
Yeah.
And then just immediately fell in love with the brewing culture, the beer culture there. You know, being a home brewer all through college, and then every restaurant you go to, seeing high school kids having a Pilsner or Quell with lunch, you're just like, wait a second, what? Like,
yeah,
this is a culture. You're not drinking just to drink. You're drinking because, you know, they're proud of their heritage. And,
sure.
And inventing the Pilsner. And everywhere you go, you just see that. And so that really furthered my kind of obsession with the brewing thing. And so just going to all the different breweries in the city of Prague and then just surrounding and around the Czech Republic. And my favorite anecdote is, you know, going to Pilsner or Quell for their brewery tours on the weekend.
Yeah.
It's free and you get free beer at the end of the tour. So someone who is studying abroad on a limited budget, it was a great way to go have, you know, liters of free Pilsner every single weekend.
Yeah, they're like, hi, Nick. Welcome back.
Yeah. Welcome back. Yeah, here's
good
the
to
glass.
See you.
Yeah. You know where the barrel is. Go pull the bung.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah. So really, really friendly hospitality over there with the beer culture. And so when we were brewing a Czech dark lager, you just had the Czech Pilsner. So you see the theme.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be an homage to name it after the apartment number, which was Krishakova 17. So we call this K17.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Is Kolstritzer a dark lager like this? Do you know this beer I'm talking about?
I don't know that beer.
I think that's a German.
Right?
I think that's a Schwartz beer.
Schwartz beer.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe.
So, what makes a Czech dark lager?
For me, it's, you know, not using the roasted malts that you would use in like a Schwartz beer.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask what the malt bill was.
Yeah.
For this.
So it's really just it's floor malted Czech pils. And then some Munich 2. And then we do use a little bit of that Carafa from Weyermann just to give it the color.
Okay.
Dehusked or?
Dehusked, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and so that really just adds instant color without, like, overwhelming roast notes like you would in any kind of roasted barley.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it keeps it light.
Yeah.
Still.
It looks dark, but, you know, it drinks just as light as a Pilsner, hopefully.
A little more body.
Yeah, more body for sure. Yeah, a little more complex with the Munich malts. And
yeah.
Yeah, but same house Czech lager yeast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Incredible head retention. And like kind of a tan head also that comes out of it.
Yeah,
secrets
thanks.
To that?
Inline carbonation.
Oh yeah,
I think that really helps. You know, the smaller the bubble size, that you can do with your carbonation,
and probably retains more of those proteins from in solution versus if you're bubbling through a
stripped
fermenter
out in a big carb stone.
Yeah,
yeah. That so that all of our beers kind of I hope you'll notice that have great head retention because of that.
Got it.
But then just the higher protein content in the floor malted Pilsner, I think too, definitely adds to the head retention and the nice body.
Yeah, okay. It's got a really smooth body without any astringency from the little bit of dark grain. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Super clean. And you mentioned to us before the show that your centrifuge has inline carbonation technology.
It does. That's why we chose that specific centrifuge.
Okay.
So when we knew we wanted to... You know, we saw 6 years ago when we were planning this and building out that the trend was going to be, hey, everyone's going to be doing cans. Mm-hmm. Like, bottles are dying. And so how do we package most responsibly into these cans?
Okay.
Because the introductory can lines that you can get right now, like, I won't name names, but we've all seen the little inline plastic canning lines that have a stick that fill up a can and you cap it and it's good for about 2 days.
Because of oxygen.
Right. So we knew that, you know, if we're going to be a packaging brewery, we want to have the most shelf stable product possible. And we want to move to centrifuging, move away from DE. I think a lot of people are trying to move away from DE, just being at CBC last month, seeing everyone go to like now the cross flow membrane filtration, because DE is, you know, dangerous to work with and probably not the best for the environment. And how are you disposing of that and all that kind of stuff?
I see.
And not to mention that it's hard to combat, you know, the dissolved oxygen numbers with that as well.
Got it.
So anyways, when we were shopping around, we saw ProBrew out of Wisconsin was adding these inline carbonation units to centrifuges.
I see.
And it carbonates before it hits the bowl, so that also traditionally the neg with a centrifuge would be that it could add DO from spinning, and if you have a you know, leaky gasket anywhere on there, you're gonna get crazy oxygen numbers, right? So by carbonating the beer first, it kind of combats that.
I see.
Yeah,
I didn't even know you could do that. I would. It just sounds counterintuitive, like that it would foam, for example.
Right.
Once it hits the centrifuge. Yeah.
But it doesn't.
Yeah, doing everything under pressure and at very, very high speeds, obviously. So
okay.
Yeah.
And so, and you were telling us also that this essentially means that you can transfer your beer and carbonate it and in 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go through a tank in about 30 minutes. And oftentimes, they're 20 barrel tanks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oftentimes, if we're, you know, our sales guys are killing it and they need a keg right away, we can just fill a keg right off the centrifuge, which is which is an amazing luxury to have.
Yeah. That's wild.
And so there's no downtime in the bright tanks. They kind of just serve as storage vessels for the canning line and kegs.
I see.
At half an hour process time, I imagine it takes more time to set it up and clean up afterwards.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot longer.
Yeah.
By a lot.
Yeah. That's by funny. A lot. Yeah. By the time we CIP it, sanitize it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, and in our conversations on the show and before, as you should be, you're super concerned with DO, with oxygen. In fact, we were looking at ports that you had built on your tanks to use for dry hopping.
Sure.
But you've said you've since kind of even gone away from that because you found you can get less DO by dry hopping, rousting from the bottom?
Yeah, we'll bubble with CO2 to rouse all the dry hops. And, you know, a lot of people do that. And we did panels and to see what aroma we liked better from the beers, doing them both ways.
Yeah.
And we didn't really see any difference. So
okay,
it's a lot easier to throw a check valve on the bottom of a tank and bubble some CO2 in there to get the hops back into solution to make sure the really big dry hop loads on the West Coast beers and all the IPAs that everyone loves down here, you know, get that awesome aroma and you're getting your money's worth out of all those hops.
Sure. Mm. And how are you measuring your dissolved oxygen here?
With a Hawk meter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
And for you, what is the range? What's your sweet spot? Where do you like to be?
We like to be as close to zero as possible.
That's awesome.
None is the preferred number.
But you can't.
Yeah. Yeah, as close to zero as possible.
But you don't get to zero.
No.
No.
I mean, yeah, we get really, really low numbers in the lagers, obviously.
Okay.
And so what we like to do is, because we do can four core beers year round, so we'll always check the DO numbers from the bright tank to the cans.
Okay.
And we'll see that there's minimal, if at all, pickup on the lagers and the cans, which is really nice.
That is nice.
Yeah, and then IPAs, you know, have a little higher numbers.
I know you said you did sensory comparing dry hopping with rousing versus the recirc.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious about what your rousing technique is, because the fear there is commonly you're driving off aroma from the dry hop
right.
by doing that. And that's kind of why the proponents of the recirc.
Sure. So we'll do that with the tank bunged, mm-hmm. and we'll bubble it until we get about 5 to 7 PSI in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, I'm hoping that we're keeping all those oils inside the tank, and we don't have the blow off port open to let out all those aromas and stuff like that.
Okay.
So that'll take a real low pressure, about 30 minutes.
Okay.
And we're finding really good success with that.
Okay. So raising the tank to 5 PSI roughly
yeah.
over the course of 30 minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Right. And then, you know, and keeping it closed after that. Yeah.
And through the bottom of the cone.
Bottom of right. the cone. Okay. Yep. Yeah, just throw a check valve there on the bottom and mm-hmm. go. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's because of the rousing that you get more DO in IPAs than lagers? Is that why you're saying?
Oh no! I just
the
think
recirc
the recirc would cause that, but okay. but in general, because we don't have a hop cannon or anything here. We're you know
yeah,
we're
yeah.
small 20 barrel system. So yeah, just opening the tanks, exposing them to oxygen, and stuff like that, and all the you know oxygen and the vegetable matter and hops that we.
If you guys were a showroom, you might be able to convince a vendor to give you a yeah. small hop cannon.
Yeah, if right. we could yeah, get a little more floor space.
You might get some yeah. contacts after the show. You never know.
Yeah, hit us up.
Be like,
yeah.
hey, yeah, I want to show some. I want to show off there.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the name a little bit.
Sure.
So when you were building, you were telling us, you know, you're pretty far into the build out, and you still didn't have a name.
We didn't have a name. Yeah.
So where did 14 Cannons come from?
So 14 Cannons, we kept coming back to there is a pirate in the family. So Marshall, the owner of the Marshall Group, his great 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 uncle. Was the captain of a pirate ship that fought in the Revolutionary War.
Amazing.
Yeah, and you know, we have all the documentation of this, and we just kept thinking, like, we got to do something with that.
Yeah.
It seems like easy branding.
So he didn't come in here saying, hey, you can have your brewery, your dream brewery, but it's my name we're using. He didn't do
no,
that?
No, we just kept talking about what's good branding. And for me, like, a pet peeve of mine is... I did not want to be named after a mountain range.
Okay. Like, yeah. Yeah. Another mountain range.
We didn't want to be a mountain range. At the time, there was already a Westlake Brewing Company.
Okay.
They have since closed. But, you know, the city name was taken. I didn't want to be a geographical name because
yeah.
it's just so played out, I think, nowadays.
Sure.
and so we're like, well, then what do we call it? So we just kept coming back to there's a pirate in the family. We got to do something with that. And he was the captain of the Tyrannicide.
Okay.
Tyrannicide means tyrant killer. During the war, England was the tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we'd be Tyrannicide Brewing Company. And I was like, that can be edgy, you know, tyrant killer, all that.
Yeah.
And then we kind of shopped the name around and people, is that a dinosaur? Is that a pesticide?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh no. Okay. Not to mention it's a hard word to say and spell after you've had a couple of them.
That's right. Yeah.
So then, you know,
although
back to the drawing board. Yeah.
A pirate T-Rex.
Yeah.
He's a pretty cool mascot.
I see a movie in our future of a pirate T-Rex. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm down.
yeah.
Yeah. We then, you know, pivoted and figured out that the Tyrannicide had 14 cannons on it. It was a 14 cannon gunship, and that we could keep the theme, and we thought that sounded cool. Who doesn't love guns, right?
Yeah.
America.
exactly.
And so we went with that.
I love it. I think it's a cool name, and mm-hmm. And that it has a story that's related to the family makes it even cooler. Like mm-hmm. You didn't just tell me, well, Marshall's a big fan of pirates.
Yeah, he likes both.
We're like,
yeah.
Well, who doesn't?
You know? Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think you guys landed on it.
Thanks, yeah. Game. Yeah, we just haven't figured out a quick way of telling the story yet. But
yeah, well, yeah. That's all right. Beer, you know what, and I get it, like yeah. marketing and everybody's attention span.
Right.
But beer doesn't have to be quick. It's not. It's something you sit and talk over. So
right. And if the beer's good enough, people will sit and mull over the brand trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, there does not exist. Like, we were just talking about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah, talk more about it. Mm-hmm. Look, I pared our show down from 3 hours to one, okay? That's where, you know, that's as quick as it needs to be. One, if it takes you an hour to describe 14 cannons, you're doing great.
Right.
And then the motif in the brewery is, of course, very nautical. It's it feels a bit like you're on an old ship. But you're telling us that all of this stuff is reclaimed, too.
Yeah, all reclaimed. All the wood on the walls came from a foundry, and it's actually stamped on the back of the wood, year 1908.
Oh, yeah.
So we thought that was pretty excellent.
That's super
when
cool.
We found that. All the furniture is reclaimed, bar top, all that. So it definitely has, you know, an old vibe to it.
Yeah.
When we were walking in, I made a comment to Justin. I assume originally it was a temporary tasting room structure out front.
Yes, our COVID patio.
That looks the least temporary of any COVID
other
patio.
Other than the white tarp that's like, if you were to remove the white tarp, you're like, wow, that's an old building that they put on their patio.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, the wood, the woodwork. Yeah, that's just a testament to Marshall's guys. They do amazing work. So
yeah,
when we did the COVID patio thing, they were like, well, we'll build you a deck.
Right.
Yeah. And again, just the luxury of having that is really, really nice. I'm very fortunate.
Yeah, because you've gone through a couple little expansion rounds.
We have, yeah.
And I imagine having the owner and his whole contracting company behind you has eased the expansion process.
100%. I mean, we still have the hole in the ceiling right above us where we craned in the extra tanks.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
We've left the hatch up on the ceiling. That'll still open in case we need to crane in another lagering tank someday. So
amazing.
I'll stack that lagering tank. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were kind of joking with us before the show, and I want us to tell the story to make brewers jealous right now. And it would make you jealous too, right? Having a construction company as part of the company, you needed more cellaring space.
Yes.
But there was a cold box in the way.
Right.
So what'd you do?
We cut the cold box in half and added a sloped cellar.
And how long? I mean, that must take months, right?
It happened the next day.
You asked for it.
And I asked for it. I said, we're out of space.
Yeah.
I have an idea. Uh-huh. We can move these little 10-barrel fermenters over here.
Yeah.
And then I came in the next day, and the guys had cut the cold box in half, and there was dirt floors being dug up.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like I said, sorry, brewers. I didn't mean to actually have to make you jealous, but that's a cool thing.
Yeah, and that would probably be a 6-month process if I had to do it myself and quote it out. And,
oh, yeah. Just to start.
Yeah, right.
Well, and, you know, we've interviewed breweries who are engineers by trade. We've interviewed breweries who are, you know, very mechanical, or they're good at welding. And we always talk about, wow, what a great combo. You know, I've never interviewed a brewery that's also a construction company. And really, what a great combo. Even more, like, now I always used to say, God, yeah, it's so hard to find welders. Now I'm like, dude, get a welder. That's easy.
Right.
The construction is the hard part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have overnight projects getting developed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty great. And you're looking at your draft system too, direct draw, right, from the cold
direct
box?
Direct draw, yeah. Yep.
Did your construction company built that too?
I did that one.
You did that,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that I can handle a little bit of plumbing.
There you go. It looks great. Yeah. How many taps do you pour here out of the tap room?
We have 27 taps now.
Okay.
And they're quite often full. I think we have two or three open ones, and we have two or three new beers coming out this month. So
got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
We keep a big variety. One thing I learned, the job I had before this was at a brew pub, and it was my first time working in a brew pub environment. I'd always just been production.
Okay.
And so, you know, having people come in for lunch and their salads and their iced tea was a new environment for me. But then we also learned that you really have to have like a style of beer for everyone. Mm-hmm. If you're that pub environment, then you have to have the beer that, you know, everyone's going to like. So, you know, some people want a fruited wheat beer, and that's not necessarily a core beer, you know, that I would ever, you know, stake our claim to, but we have a fruited wheat beer on year round because a lot of consumers want that.
Yeah.
You know, we make, you know, I hesitate to even say it on your show because I love your show and you know, I don't want people to hear this, but like, we make a peanut butter beer and we have to.
Attaboy. You just say it. You just own it, Nick.
Right.
It's all right.
Yeah, own it. Because, you know, we have a large part of, you know, our customers that come in, and that's why they come in.
Yeah.
They want to try that beer. So I really took that like ethos of like brew pub and make sure that there's a style for everyone on tap into this tasting room. We don't distribute all those styles. Obviously, we can't distribute 27 beers, you know, year round with one sales guy. Mm-hmm. But we always make sure we have a huge variety on tap because of that.
I think that what you're saying is especially true now with the competition from spirits, from other beverages.
Yep.
When, you know, my place isn't a full bar either. When you don't have a full liquor license, I think it's especially true that you have to offer that variety and something
right.
for everybody. Give them a reason to come, even though they can't have a cocktail.
Right.
You know. All right. Well, I'm going to have us take another quick break. We can taste another beer. I'm also looking at a bunch of awards on the wall, and I want to maybe talk about that when we come back and maybe taste some award-winning beer. I don't know if you have any of that
Let's
on
do
tap
that.
Right
we,
now.
We have one.
Perfect. All right. You're listening to The Session. We're at 14 Cannons in Westlake Village. Go to 14cannons.com if you want to check it out. There's a lot of photos of what we're talking about. You get a really good concept of what we're where we're sitting right now if you just go to 14cannons.com. Hang in there. You're listening to The Session, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. We are still at 14 Cannons in Westlake Village. Geographically, nice place to live down here. And I just found it interesting. You were telling me I was wondering what county we're in because I'm just trying to figure out what progress Beardy and I are making on our tour. And this Westlake is split into
split.
Two different counties,
yeah.
which is super odd.
So we're on the LA County side
okay.
of Westlake.
Yeah.
And then halfway in between the town, it's Ventura County.
But that makes it two different cities also, right?
You would think. I've lived on both sides of the tracks. Yeah. Right now I live on the poor side of the tracks.
Well, you're a brewer.
But, you know, yeah, I'm a brewer. Yeah. But yeah, we're in LA County here. So this is like as far up the 101 you can go.
Okay.
In L.A. County.
And then you cross into, is it Ventura County?
Yeah. And then as soon as you hit Thousand Oaks, you're in Ventura County.
Okay. Got it. All right. Well, as I mentioned before the break, I'm looking at a bunch of awards behind the bar, and one of them is a World Beer Cup Award.
Yeah.
Is that from this year?
It is, from last month.
Nice. Were you in Nashville?
I was. I took my brewer to Nashville. It's his first time going to CBC.
Cool.
So he thinks now every time we go on a trip, you win a World Beer Cup Award, which is going to be a sobering reality for him someday.
Yeah. Right. Expectations are high.
Yeah, they're really high.
You're right.
Yeah.
Amazing. What's the beer that you won with?
So this is our Baltic Porter
that
we named Prussian River.
Oh, nice.
Prussian River. Uh-huh.
Very nice. No calls from Russian River on that yet?
I haven't got the cease and desist from Vinny yet.
With an award-winning beer, I better let it slide. He'll be like, well, if it was shit, I might make it change.
Right. Yeah. Send me some also.
Yeah. That's a delicious Baltic Porter.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is this the exact same recipe, everything that won?
Yes, it did. This is the same batch.
It's the same batch even.
Yeah. We have two kegs left.
Got it.
And I assume that it's a lagered Baltic Porter.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that's what makes a Baltic Porter a Baltic Porter is the use of lager yeast.
Okay.
And then also really high ABV. So this hit 9%.
Okay.
Which is an extremely high ABV for a lager. And that's what makes Baltic Porters challenging to brew, but also really fun to brew.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is it, it's lager yeast and lager temp too, or lager yeast
yes.
a bit warmer?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Lager temp too. So it takes a long time to ferment out.
Okay.
I think primary in this beer was like 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Long time.
So, okay. So from a, compared to the other lagers we've been having, was it just a week or two longer in total
no,
process time?
No, we knew we were brewing this for the competition.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave this 3 months in the tank.
In the lagering tank?
No, we did this in a conical in our 10-barrel tank.
Okay.
So we tied up one of our 10-barrels for 3 months.
Wow.
Which we've never done before. Mm-hmm. But I think the results speak for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were very happy with that. So, yeah.
So can you tell us about the recipe and what you think makes this an award-winning beer?
I do think that lagering time has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
So, I mean, you guys are tasting it now. Like, you don't get any heat from the alcohol in this, right?
Right.
None.
Like,
yeah.
This is 9% alcohol, and you get zero heat.
Not even, you don't smell it. It's
right.
Not, it's
right.
nowhere to be found.
Yeah, there's no, like, ethyl esters on it or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has a big part of it. But then just a really complex, fun, you know, Baltic Porter malt bill. I think there's six different malts in here.
Okay.
So really just complex and chewy. And, then it's not a secret, I think, with lagers, but the more yeast you pitch, the better. So it was almost a comical amount of yeast that we had to pitch.
Wow.
to get this to ferment, so cleanly and so well and dry out as much as it did.
That's a calculation you made ahead of time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And are we talking like 3X what you'd expect for like a normal size lager?
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Wow.
It was almost, 3X exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a lot of lager yeast, but because, you know, the theme of today and kind of our brews that we love here, we have a lot of healthy lager yeast on hand. Mm-hmm. So when we were looking at, okay, let's submit to the World Beer Cup this year, what will we make? Like, well, we could do this. We could pull this style off, I think, really well. We just had our, you know, our Czech dark lager, so we love making a dark lager year-round. So we thought we'd brew a special one for the competition, and we were thrilled, obviously, that it won. Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about your temperature profile through fermentation all the way into lagering, like with how long it's at different temperatures?
We ferment this, our house strain at 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And then we do a raise at about 6 Plato. We will step up a couple degrees for the diacetyl rest. And then we do a really slow crash, mm-hmm. Just a couple degrees a day on the slow crash. And that not only helps our glycol chiller, you know, it's something we're conscious about when it's hot here in LA. But, you know, just the more time you take with the beer, the better. Just kept pressure on the tank the whole 3 months it was in there. And, you know, making sure as soon as it gets down to that crash temperature that we're just constantly dumping the yeast, get all the yeast out right away with a lager, really with any beer when it's done. Just to make sure you're not having any off flavors with that.
How low do you lager at?
At 31 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay. Is what our system can handle.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
In the middle of summertime down
here?
Yeah,
uh-huh. In LA. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, but yeah, we're thrilled with this beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beardy and I were talking at the break when we took a couple sips. It is super complex, and it has a nice upfront sweetness and complexity. You get some caramelized notes going in, but then a firm bitterness at the end. It has a really nice balance of the sweet and the bitter, and we were kind of saying that the bitterness then also gives you that, adds to the perception of it drying out too.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, to where you're ready for a sip, you know, right afterwards.
And we found that we brew, one thing we didn't drink today was our Marzen. So we brew a Marzen year-round, so which is a, you know, traditional Oktoberfest beer. But that's kind of my white whale. When I went to Oktoberfest in Munich for the first time when I was living abroad, I had a Marzen for the first time in my life. And being a home brewer for so many years, I had never had a Marzen. And then having one in Germany at Oktoberfest, I was like, holy crap, like, what is this?
Yeah.
I've been doing beer all wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's always been a thing I knew when I finally had my own brewery, that we would have a Marzen on year round. But that's a sweet style of beer, right? We do a traditional, you know, Marzen, not like a Vienna lager lighter thing, but a German Marzen. So we found upping the bitterness charge really kind of helps with that cloying sweetness on the back end.
So what kind of IBUs are you looking at in this?
We targeted 30 for this.
Okay.
Yeah, which I think is, you know, like right in the middle for a Baltic Porter.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How low did it finish in terms of gravity?
This finished pretty low, like below 3 Plato. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, finished real low.
These beers are fantastic.
Yeah.
I think they just keep getting better.
Yeah. I would award this a bronze at the World Beer Cup. That's right where I would rank it.
The 2023 World Beer Cup?
Yeah, right.
So you agreed with the judges.
I actually would be fascinated to taste the silver and the gold because this is such a stellar Baltic Porter. And if any medal is so, you know, right?
It's a crapshoot.
As a longtime brewer, to get a medal is just fantastic, right?
Right.
So it almost doesn't matter. But if I'm sitting at that table, I'm going, man, there's a silver and a gold?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a job I never want to have to do. Yeah. It seems really hard.
Yeah.
Wow.
Great work.
That's a nice beer.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've done lagers.
And, yes.
You know what's cool about this trip so far? We should change the name instead of... I'm just going to change it multiple times. It's become Justin and the Beard.
I just like the new one.
Well, it's going to be the Lager Tour, because even on our last show that we've just recorded, we did almost all lagers. Until the end, Brendan finally gave us a hobby beer, too. We were quite happy with it. The all Lager Tour so far.
I'm fine with both of the new names.
In fact, I think we're going to try to hit Enegrin after this.
We'll
a shout out just because I'm a fan of their beer. I haven't met them yet. Chris, I think.
Yeah, Chris, yeah.
I'll probably try to bug him while we're there.
Yeah. But, I'll call him and let him know you're coming.
Cool. It's turning into the lager tour.
Do they have a Venice location that we need to know about?
Yeah, tell me.
Get lost in.
Yeah. The wrong one. Okay, but let's finish with an IPA.
Please.
Not because we have to on this show. I do what I want, Beardy.
Oh, you do?
But because it's named after the ship, the Tyrannicide.
Yeah.
This is our flagship beer.
Okay, so we got to talk about
so
it.
Literally.
For
this
that
is
reason.
Tyrannicide IPA, our flagship.
And it's a West Coast IPA.
It is,
okay.
Yep.
All right, so
no,
tell me.
No lactose was used in the making of this.
None lactose. Yeah.
None. Nuns.
So, big floral bouquet when you're smelling it. And this is all cryo-hopped. So,
right.
Yeah, this is our cryo-hopped beer. So, it's Simcoe Mosaic and Equinaut, mm-hmm. All pretty similar amounts. And all cryo-hopped, 7.5%, which, you know, I the goal is to not make a drink like it's 7.5%.
Sure. Which it doesn't. But anytime you have a ton of hops like that, that's going to help
it helps
you.
Hide it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, we love the aroma on this that we really get from using those cryo hops and, you know, a bunch of cheater hops. They're super fun and trendy.
Mm-hmm.
When
yeah.
you get to say Simcoe Mosaic. And
that's a great West Coast.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you this. In my hop discussions, and I did a whole hop show for a while, Nick, the other Nick, my co-host at the time, he would say... he still felt that there should be some traditional hop matter in some of the recipes. He loved cryo. They were pushing cryo, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the combination with hop matter, he felt, was the route to take. So I'm curious why you chose to go, like, 100 cryo on this.
We actually do put a little T90 in the dry hop for it because of that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
The one thing that I found that is fantastic is using – this is 100% cryo in the boil. In the kettle, and we get a great yield because of it.
Okay.
So using a lot less of that plant matter soaks up a lot less beer when you're brewing.
Makes sense.
And so the yields we get are really, really nice. And anyone that brews these crazy double dry hop, triple dry hop beers knows that yield can hurt you in the end.
Sure.
So so we kind of make up for the yield there. But then when we started 5 years ago, it was still that hop powder.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really hard to, you know, to dry hop with. And then they came out with the cryo hop pellets, which they are really, really easy and fantastic to use.
Okay.
And we like using those. But we do mix in some T90 in the dry hop because I agree that it needs a little bit of that plant matter.
And, and if I remember right, it's really something about the process that happens. It's not just that you're getting a ton of flavor, but it's that the cryo just does well having a little bit of matter to cling to.
I've heard that, and I think our sensory results have proved that.
The same thing.
And one thing I've recently heard some brewers talking about is especially when you add a centrifuge into the mix, having all of that hop matter removed actually makes the solids, when they get discharged out of the bowl, being all yeast and cakey, it actually can clog up the solid side of the centrifuge.
I see.
So brewers actually have been adding back some traditional pellets, mostly for centrifuge processing.
Got it.
Beyond just the flavor components.
Okay. Yeah, this is a nice West Coast right here.
Thank you. This is about 60% of our production.
Is it really?
So, yeah, okay. This is our I like to call it our fastball.
This is your main, and then you said earlier your Czech Pils is your number two.
Yep, Czech Pils number two. And we do a Mexican lager in cans.
Oh, yeah.
That does really well. It's got awesome artwork on it, and I think that really helps it in the market. It's got, like, a nice Mexican blanket artwork.
Nice.
And then we do a double West Coast IPA year-round.
Okay.
And that's a lot of fun. And that's just a bunch of Citra and the other big names. And
also cryo on that one?
Not cryo on that one.
Yeah.
But that one's fun. It's all Pilsner malt in that one.
Okay.
So more of a modern approach to the West Coast IPA.
Okay.
With the making a lot of traditional Czech lager styles and also double IPAs, and with a two-vessel system, I didn't get to look into your kettle whirlpool. How does dry hop or doing the whirlpool edition, do you leave behind like 3 barrels of beer?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah. That one is a much lower yield. Yeah. It might be worth looking into doing cryo for that one as well. But it's, you know, so hard to contract some things nowadays. And for our size, you know, we're on track to do about 2,000 barrels of beer this year. So
that's a lot of beer.
Yeah, it's a lot of beer. It's fun, but to really do the big hop contracts, to dial in, and for me to talk about selection someday,
we're
just not at that threshold yet.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on hops, do you have either a favorite new school fancy hop, or preferably, if you have some, do you have anything that's even newer than new school? Anything coming down the pipe you've checked out that you're excited about?
One hop that we have in our pale ale, we're doing an Australian pale ale right now, is Nectaron.
Oh, yeah.
That's a newer hop, and we are in love with it. Yeah, Nectaron's a lot of fun.
I like that hop.
Yeah.
I've only had, I think, maybe one or two beers with it, and yeah, that's a really nice hop.
When we turn the mics off, we can get some of our pale ale and drink
it. Okay, cool. Yeah. There's
another one. That's the end, folks. We'll see you guys later.
Your beard is ready to go. There's another one. I'm going to get the name wrong, but it's similar, but it's like... Peacherine or something.
Ooh,
fun. This one. Wynn from Wondrous made a beer with it. Don't quote me on the name, but it's something like that. When you see it, you'll find it. But it might be Peacherine. And anyway, tasted this beer, and I thought it was like a fruited beer. Hmm. Not like overpowering. It wasn't sweet or anything, but it had this just peach character to it.
Yeah.
100% hops. It was just all of it came from the hops. So
the other one we really like right now is that HBC 586.
Oh yeah,
that one's trendy. That was in the Pink Boots blend.
Oh nice.
And we do a Pink Boots beer every year.
Yeah. What's that beer called that you did this year?
That beer is called Fuck the Patriarchy.
Yeah. We saw that. I like it.
That was named by staff.
Nice.
And I think it's an ode to some Taylor Swift lyrics.
Heck yeah.
Oh.
Our friend Roger at Faction just won with his 586 pale.
Awesome.
I just had at Fluid State yesterday, I don't remember who, they had 586 in a pale or an IPA. That hop is going to take off.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they name that one.
Everybody or Everywhere?
Yeah, Everything Everywhere, not the movie, but the brewery.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the brewery. We're screwing it up.
Okay. No, I think that's it, yeah.
Is it Everybody Everywhere?
Everything Everywhere, I think, yeah.
All at once?
They're in LA, I should know this, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're new.
We'll give them a shout out when they get a show, when I invite them on the show.
Right.
But the beer is great, I'll tell you. They get that. Yeah, that 586, I hope to see more of that. That's a good one. Good shout out there. Okay. All right. Well, hey, Nick, thanks for having us here, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was great. Been a longtime listener.
Oh, well, that makes me happy, especially because the beer's really good. Sometimes when people tell me they're a longtime listener, and I'm like, oh, cool. You didn't listen that close. But that's not the case here with you.
Mm-hmm.
Though all of these are fantastic. Come out to 14 Cannons in Westlake Village if you get the chance. The tasting room is super cool.
Well, and you guys are going to have another location here soon, right?
Yeah. I guess we can drop that one.
Was that?
No, not a secret.
Okay.
But we're currently building.
We never get a scoop beer.
Second location up in Channel Islands Harbor in Oxnard, where we'll be brewing, and that's going to be really nice on the water up there.
Nice.
Yeah. But
so
timeline is still up in the air.
But I thought it's going to be open tomorrow with the way you're
where they're lagging now.
Yeah.
We can't force the city for permits any faster.
It's the permit.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay.
The one part they don't have control over.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't learned how to grease palms well enough yet.
Okay.
It's a whole other division. The lobbying division.
Right.
Take on a new partner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got to get a lobbyist in here.
Yeah. Go to 14cannons.com. Check it out. Coming out and see them. Nick's making just awesome beer. And if you're a brewer, it's a showroom. Not the kind where they sing and dance, like I thought. The kind where you get to see some really cool brewery equipment.
Yeah, let's do a collab. Hit me up.
There you go.
Yeah.
Love it. All right. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us today. Beardy, our next stop is Radiant Beer Company.
Okay.
In Anaheim, California.
Oh.
Still making our way down to San Diego for the Homebrew Conference. There's still tickets available to HomebrewCon. Go to homebrewcon.org, I think, and you can get yourself some tickets. And you can hang out with me and Beardy down there. But we're doing a live listener party. By the time you listen to this, the Radiant live listener party will be over.
Are we going to do an after party at Disneyland?
No, because JP's not with us on this tour.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, no need to do
that. Couldn't convince him?
I did try to get us an RV park right near Disneyland, but they're booked up because Disneyland.
Sure.
So we're staying in Orange, which, if I remember right, is not as nice as Anaheim. But whatever.
But home of Green Cheek.
Oh, it is home of Green Cheek. Oh, shit. I didn't know that. So we might have to hit up Green Cheek on our way out on Friday.
Yeah.
When we head to Oceanside, we're going to be talking to Bagby. We're going to go to Bagby, do a little interview there. And then Modern Times / Maui. We're going to talk to Garrett, the new CEO.
That's another live show.
That's a live show that you can join us at. And then finally, White Labs will end this tour, which is pretty much our anniversary party, although I haven't billed it that way too much, but it's our anniversary party. 18 years.
You're legal now.
I'm finally legal. Yeah. I'm barely legal. Yeah. All right. You've been listening to Justin and the Beard on the Brewing Network.
Summer Lager Tour.
Summer Lager Tour, live from 14 Cannons. We'll be back with more. Thanks to our sponsors. Hey, 21st Amendment has a Mexican lager you can get right now on the shelf. El Sully, my favorite. Mm-hmm. Go grab yourself some El Sully, and you can taste along on the Summer Lager Tour with Justin and the Beard.
Join us, won't you?
All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves and your beer.